Good morning, and welcome to America's Fabric. I'll be your host today, Charles Heller. The audience of Liberty Watch has asked me to look into Mark Levin's book about the modern movement to amend the Constitution called The Liberty Amendments. In beginning that search, I've discovered a number of well-reasoned articles in favor of several amendments to the Constitution which would rein in the federal government and address several other important problems. I'm going to detail some portion of those articles for you here and give you some resources on how you, the audience, can get involved and make a difference. First, a group of people named Citizens for Self-Governance has launched a new project to call a Convention of the States. Convention of the States project provides a mechanism to implement Mark Levin's Liberty Amendment strategy. Purcellville, Virginia, August 15, 2013, Citizens for Self-Governance, CSG, is pleased to announce the launching of its Convention of the States project, the COS project, which offers a grassroots plan to implement the important ideas Mark Levin has begun to publicly advocate. Levin's best-selling book, The Liberty Amendments, is opening the eyes of many Americans to the possibility of using the power of the states under the Constitution to rein in the abuses of power by the federal government. Citizens for Self-Governance believes that Washington, D.C. is broken and can only be fixed if the states call a convention of the states to propose constitutional amendments that would curtail the runaway power of the federal government. Article 5 of the Constitution says that if 34 states submit applications for a convention on the same subject, Congress must call a convention. Historical and legal precedent dictate that delegates at this convention can only propose amendments that align with the original subject. If the states call a convention for proposing a balanced budget amendment, for example, delegates may only discuss a balanced budget amendment. Rather than calling an Article 5 convention for a particular amendment, Citizens for Self-Governance seeks to call a convention of the states for a particular subject, limiting the jurisdiction and power of the federal government. This strategy would allow the states to formally consider almost all of Mark Levin's Liberty Amendments, giving delegates the freedom to propose the necessary amendments to stop the runaway power of Washington, D.C. Of Mark Levin's 11 proposed amendments, 10 would be germane at the Convention of the States using the Citizens for Self-Government model application, said Michael Ferris, Senior Fellow for Constitutional Studies at the Center for Self-Government. These include amendments for limiting congressional and Supreme Court terms of office, restoring the Senate, which is very important, I'll say, getting rid of the 17th Amendment, limiting federal taxing and spending, 2 amendments, limiting the federal bureaucracy, promoting free enterprise, giving states direct authority to amend the Constitution and check Congress, and protecting the vote. Only Levin's property rights amendment would not be eligible for discussion, Ferris said. Quote, our model would not be limited to Levin's proposed texts. Quote, the Constitution of the states could consider other proposals as well, so long as they relate to the subject matter of reducing the power of Washington, D.C. and imposing fiscal restraint on the federal government. Unquote. Quote, of all the Article 5 projects that have been proposed, ours is the only one that has the breadth to actually solve the core problems caused by the federal government's persistent abuse of power, Ferris said. The leadership of the Convention of the States movement also believes grassroots mobilization is the key to calling a convention of the states, and they will only rely heavily on American citizens to push this project forward. Ferris, founder of the Home School League Defense Association, Citizens for Self-Government President Mark Meckler, who is also the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots, have years of experience in this arena, giving the Citizens for Self-Governance project a clear advantage and heightening of the chance of success. If you'd like more information on the specifics of it, you can see conventionofstates.com. That's conventionofstates.com. Convention of States is all one word. For more information, we see 4 major abuses perpetrated by the federal government. These abuses are not mere instances of bad policy. They are driving us towards an age of soft tyranny in which the government does not shatter men's wills but softens, bends, and guides them instead. If we do nothing to halt these abuses, we run the risk of becoming, as Alexis de Tocqueville warned in 1840, nothing more than a flock of timid and industrious animals of which the government is the shepherd. Alexis de Tocqueville said that in his book, Democracy in America, written in 1840. There's 4 things that are a severe problem that the federal government is doing, and I'll detail them here. Number 1, the spending and debt crisis. The $17 trillion national debt is staggering, but it only tells a part of the story. If we apply the normal rules of accounting, the federal government owes trillions more in vested Social Security benefits and other programs. This is why the government cannot tax its way out of this debt. Even if they confiscated 100% of every citizen's income in the United States, it would not cover the debt. Second, the regulatory crisis. The federal bureaucracy has placed a regulatory burden upon business that is complex, conflicted, and crushing. Little accountability exists when agencies rather than Congress enact the real substance of the law. Research from the American Enterprise Institute shows that since 1949, federal regulations have lowered the real gross domestic product growth by 2% and made America 72% poorer. Third, congressional attacks on state sovereignty. For years, Congress has been using federal grants to keep the states under its control, for instance, federal highway funds. Using these grants, accompanied by mandates which are rarely fully funded, Congress has turned state legislatures into their regional agencies rather than truly independent Republican governments. That's Republican with a small r. It comes out of the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4. The Congress shall guarantee to the states a Republican, small r Republican form of government. In other words, representative government, not a democracy. A radical social agenda and erosion of the rights of the people accompany all of this. While substantial efforts have been made to combat the social engineering and to protect people's rights, we've missed one of the most important principles of the American founding. 4. Federal takeover of the decision-making process. The founders believed that the structures of a limited government would provide the greatest protection of liberty. There were to be checks and balances at the federal level, and everything not specifically granted to Congress for legislative control was left to the states per the 10th Amendment. Collusion among decision-makers in Washington, D.C. has replaced these checks and balances. The federal judiciary supports Congress and the White House in its ever-escalating attack upon the jurisdiction of the 50 states. We need to realize that the structure of decision-making matters. Who decides what the law shall be is even more important than what law is decided. The protection of liberty requires a strict adherence to the principle that power is limited and delegated. Washington, D.C. does not believe this principle, as evidenced by an unbroken practice of expanding the boundaries of federal power. And you can look, I'm going to go off the article and comment here for a minute. You can look back into the 30s at the decision of Wickard v. Filburn, which was a Supreme Court case, which said that a farmer couldn't exceed the amount of wheat he was allowed to grow on his own property because it would affect interstate commerce by his not buying that much wheat from other places. Truly, the federal government's reach has been expanding factorially since the 30s. Back to the article. In a remarkably frank admission, the Supreme Court rebuffed another challenge to the federal spending power by acknowledging their approval of programs that violate the will of the founders. Quote, "This framework has been sufficiently flexible over the past two centuries to allow for enormous changes in the nature of government. The federal government undertakes activities today that would have been unimaginable to the framers in two senses. First, because the framers would not have conceived that any government would conduct such activities, and second, because the framers would not have believed that the federal government, rather than the states, would assume such responsibilities. Yet the powers conferred upon the federal government by the Constitution were phrased in language broad enough to allow for the expansion of the federal government's role." Unquote. And that came from a decision by the Supreme Court, New York versus United States, 505 U.S. 144, 157, from 1992. What does this mean? This is not a partisan issue. Washington, D.C. will never voluntarily relinquish meaningful power, no matter who is elected, be they Democrat, Republican, or something else. The only rational conclusion is this. Unless some political force outside of Washington, D.C. intervenes, the federal government will continue to bankrupt this nation, embezzle the legitimate authority of the states, and destroy the liberty of the people. Securing the blessings of liberty for future generations, Washington, D.C. is on a path that will enslave our children to the debts of the past. See more at www.conventionstates.com. The most modern objection to an Article 5 convention is called the runaway convention objection. It envisions a doomsday scenario in which delegates disregard the original issue, rewrite the Constitution, and change the entire American system of government. While this initial response is understandable, it's based on fear and misinformation. Here are the facts. 1. There's a clear, strong, single-subject precedent that would almost certainly be declared binding in the event of a court challenge. There have been over 400 applications from state legislatures for an Article 5 convention in the history of the American Republic. No such convention has ever been called because there's never been an application from 2/3 of the states for a single subject. In addition to this, there is a huge amount of historical precedent that limits interstate conventions to a particular subject. 2. Ratification of any proposed amendment requires the approval of 38 states. It only takes 13 states to vote no to defeat any proposed amendment, and the chances of 38 state legislatures approving a rogue amendment are effectively zero. 3. Improper changes to the process can be legally challenged by state legislators. The Supreme Court has held that Congress acted unconstitutionally when it changed the rules of the process in midstream, see Idaho v. Freeman, D.C., Idaho, 1981. Citizens for Self-Governance Senior Fellow for Constitutional Studies Michael Ferris was lead counsel for Washington state legislators in that litigation, the last major Article 5 case in U.S. history. 4. There is absolutely no historical precedent for a runaway convention. Many opponents of a convention of the states make the historically false allegation that our Constitution was adopted as a result of an illegal or runaway convention. Such an argument was invented by the enemies of the Constitution and is unsupported by historical fact. See, was the Constitution legally adopted by Michael Ferris? American citizens must evaluate the relative safety of two choices. We can allow Washington, D.C. to continue abusing the Constitution and the rights of the people with the vague hope that someday Washington will see the light and relinquish power. Or, we call a convention of the states, trusting it will behave properly, and one of the many lines of defense will stop any misuse of power. We believe the choice is clear. A convention of the states is the safest means by which we can preserve our liberty. See more information at conventionofstates.com. We believe that our strategy gives us an almost certain chance of success. Two goals separate our plan from all other Article 5 organizations. Citizens for Self-Government wants to call a convention for a particular subject rather than a particular amendment. Instead of calling a convention for a balanced budget amendment, although we are entirely supportive of such an amendment, we want to call a convention for limiting the purpose and the power and the jurisdiction of the federal government. 2. We believe the grassroots is the key to calling a successful convention. The goal is to build a political operation in a minimum of 40 states, getting 100 people to volunteer in at least 75% of the state legislative districts. That's 3,000 districts. We believe this is very doable. Only through the support of the American people will this project have a chance to succeed. Our solution is big enough to solve the problem. Rather than calling a convention for a specific amendment, Citizens for Self-Governance has launched the Convention of the States project to urge state legislatures to properly use Article 5 to call a convention for a particular subject, reducing the power of Washington, D.C. It is important to note that a convention for an individual amendment, example, a balanced budget amendment, would be limited to that single idea. Requiring a balanced budget is a great idea that Citizens for Self-Governance fully supports. Congress, however, could comply with a balanced budget amendment by simply raising taxes. That would balance the budget. We need spending restraints as well. We need restraints on taxation. We need prohibitions against improper federal regulation. We need to stop unfunded mandates. A convention of the states needs to be called to ensure that we are able to debate and impose a complete package of restraints on the misuse of power by all branches of the federal government. And I will stress all branches. One of the problems that Jefferson realized a number of years after the Constitution was adopted was that there was no break on the judicial system. It was, in effect, a runaway branch of government. That was one of the few regrets he had about our constitutional system. Back to the article here. What sorts of amendments could be passed? The following are examples of amendment topics that could be discussed at a convention of the states. A balanced budget amendment. A redefinition of the General Welfare Clause. The original view was the federal government could not spend any money on any topic within the jurisdiction of the states. That's no longer true today. A redefinition of the Commerce Clause. The original view was that Congress was granted a narrow and exclusive power to regulate shipments across state lines, not all the economic activity of the nation, as it has become today. A prohibition of using international treaties and law to govern the domestic law of the United States. Many court decisions in the United States have quoted the decisions of courts in foreign jurisdictions. A limitation on using executive orders and federal regulations to enact laws, since Congress is supposed to be the exclusive agency to enact such regulations. Imposing term limits on Congress and the Supreme Court. Placing an upper limit on federal taxation. Requiring the sunset of all existing federal taxes and a supermajority vote to replace them with new, fairer taxes. Of course, these are merely examples of what could be set up for discussion. The Convention of States itself would determine which ideas deserve serious consideration, and it will take a majority of votes from the states to formally propose any amendments. The founders gave us a legitimate path to save our liberty by using our state governments to impose binding restraints on the federal government. We must use the power granted to the states in the Constitution. The grassroots. The leadership of the Convention of the States Project believes that the success of a convention of states depends to a large extent on the American citizens. Our plan is as follows. 1. We seek to have a viable political operation that is active in at least 40 states. 2. Initially, we will focus on those 40 states, which have approximately 4,000 state house districts. Our goal is to have a viable political operation in at least 3,000 of those districts. We'll have 3,000 district captains who will organize at least 100 people in each district to contact their legislator to support a convention of the states, and turn out at least 25 people per district at legislative hearings. Legislators must know that our grassroots team will have their backs if they support a convention of the states. A widespread grassroots organization has been missing from the Article 5 movement. Citizens for Self-Governance's president, Mark Meckler, was the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots, one of the largest Tea Party groups in the country. Michael Ferris is the founder of the Homeschool League Defense Association. As such, he brings with him over 30 years of grassroots leadership and activism in all 50 states. We are rapidly building not only a staff for this project, but networking with like-minded coalition members who will support this project once they see it up and running. We believe that our unique application strategy combined with strong grassroots support will guarantee success of this project. If you'd like more information, you can see it at conventionofstates.com. That's conventionofstates.com. Mark Levin's book could cause a tidal wave of grassroots activism. If you've been wondering how economic amendments to the Constitution could rein in the federal government, look no further than Peter Ferrara's recent article on Forbes.com. In other words, Peter Ferrara, and you will find an article about it. Ferrara, Director of Entitlement and Budget Policy for the Heartland Institute, that's out of Illinois, demonstrates how Mark Levin's proposed amendments could drastically improve America's economic policy. Ferrara explains in detail how economic amendments could limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. One by one, he describes the benefits of each amendment, showing the particular ways Levin's proposals would help the United States rebound from the current recession and prevent future recessions. He concludes, "The potential tidal wave of public opinion and grassroots activism that Levin's book could generate should not be easily dismissed." We agree, the we being the Center for Constitutional Government. Quote, "But now comes the most effective response to Wilson and the whole progressive movement since Ronald Reagan, the Liberty Amendments restoring the Republic. Levin's balanced budget amendment provides total outlays of the federal government for any fiscal year shall not exceed its receipts for the fiscal year. That means the borrowing power of the federal government would be eliminated, which inherently limits government. But the best part of any balanced budget amendment is that it renders Keynesian economics unconstitutional. Keynesian economics holds that the key to promoting economic recovery is to increase federal spending, deficits, and debt. If that sounds nuts, it's because it is." John Maynard Keynes is who's the author of it, and it's nonsense, it's gobbledygook, and it's exactly the way we're running our federal government today. Levin's amendment to promote free enterprise would return the Commerce Clause to its original intent, which was not to grant the federal government the power to regulate interstate commerce, but to prevent states from adopting protectionist regulations on trade between the states. Next by Michael Ferris, supporting the Article 5 amendment process. Michael Ferris reports that Phyllis Schlafly was the general of the Army in the battle against the Equal Rights Amendment in the 70s. She helped raise the funds that allowed us to battle both the federal government and the National Organization for Women. We were politically together then. Now Phyllis argues against the use of Article 5, while I'm helping to lead the effort for a Convention of the States project, which seeks to use the power of the states to rein in Washington, D.C.'s abuse of power. Knowledgeable conservatives can legitimately disagree on this issue. We both have substantial experience in Article 5 issues. She's a political leader, an advocate, and I am a constitutional litigator, says Ferris. I am not the only true conservative to disagree with Phyllis Schlafly on this. Talk show host Mark Levin and Senator Tom Coburn are among the many conservative leaders who, like me, says Ferris, have begun to call for a convention of the states to stop Washington, D.C. from abusing its power. It's time to listen to the merits of their arguments rather than making snap judgments. Recounting our work together on the ERA litigation lends to my second point. Phyllis argues, quote, Article 5 doesn't give any power to the courts to correct what does or doesn't happen, unquote. Phyllis knows better. She was present in the federal courtroom in Boise, Idaho, when I, along with other members of our litigation team, argued that Congress had misused its Article 5 power. We won in court, and Phyllis and I both celebrated that victory together. The courts can and have stopped the abuse of the power granted in Article 5. But I disagree with Phyllis on an even more fundamental issue. She argues that the Constitution was illegally adopted as a result of a runaway convention. This argument is an old one, but the complete history shows it to be an unjustified slander against the Constitution itself. The Anti-Federalists invented this calumny against the Constitution, and the public schools have repeated it for so many generations that most Americans accept it as true. I'm baffled by any friend of the Constitution who argues that it was illegally adopted. Why should an illegal document be defended at all? Proponents of the illegal Constitution theory like to point to the phrase that called the convention, quote, for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation, unquote. But the call for the Constitutional Convention issued by Congress did not end with that phrase. The very same sentence also said that the purpose of the convention was to, quote, render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union, unquote. The call of the convention used the terms, quote, Articles of Confederation and federal constitution, unquote, interchangeably in the same sentence. The convention wasn't limited to proposing one amendment or 1,000. It wasn't required to send a series of amendments back for individual consideration. It was perfectly within the call of the convention to put together a new package to render the federal constitution adequate to save the nation, and that's exactly what the participants did. In order to negate the slander against the Constitution, it is incredibly important to understand the next two steps in the process of its adoption and compare them with the requirements for amendments to the Articles of Confederation. Any change to the Articles required the approval of Congress and the ratification by all 13 state legislatures at the time the Constitution was being worked on in 1787. The Constitutional Convention proposed two important changes in this process. First, rather than having the Constitution approved by state legislatures, they recommended convening special ratification conventions inside each state. Second, they recommended that the number of states required to approve the Constitution be changed from 13 to 9. It is the change in the amendment process that receives the most attention from those who claim the Constitution was illegally adopted. But contrary to what you are taught in the public schools, that change in process did not happen without proper approval. Congress first approved the new process and sent this recommendation to the state legislatures. All 13 state legislatures approved the new process by calling for ratification conventions in their own state. The requirements of the Articles of Confederation were meticulously followed. Congress and all 13 legislatures approved the change in the ratification process. It is true that the Constitution was approved by this new process, but the change in process itself was first approved by the use of old rules under the Articles of Confederation. To call the convention a runaway convention is not just a myth, it's a defamation against both the Constitution and the founders who wrote it. I respectfully contend, says Ferris, that it is time to stop demeaning the founders and start using the tools they gave us to stop a true runaway government, the one that is functioning today in Washington, D.C. At the Constitutional Convention, George Mason insisted that the states be given the power to propose amendments to the Constitution without needing approval from Congress. He argued that if the federal government abused its power, as he predicted it certainly would, it would never consent to any corrective action. Only the states could be trusted to rein in federal abuses of power. Those who oppose the use of Article 5 in the Constitution have not proposed an equally effective solution to stop the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. Phyllis Schlafly and I, Michael Ferris, have labored side by side for decades trying to elect conservatives and lobby Congress to follow the Constitution. While we've had successes here and there, it cannot be doubted that Washington, D.C.'s abuse of power has grown dramatically with no end in sight. Which do we reasonably fear more, a runaway federal government on a path to destroy our liberty, or a convention of the states given the clear and enforceable mandate to correct the abuses of power by the federal government? Many knowledgeable conservative scholars have made the unimpeachable case that the checks and balances contained in Article 5 of our current Constitution will prevent any mischief. For heaven's sake, 38 states are required to ratify any new amendment. If we can't get 13 states to stop something crazy, we're wasting our time by trying to save the Republic. Day by day and year by year, Washington, D.C. is deliberately and persistently increasing its power. Washington, D.C. will never fix itself. The framers gave the states the power to amend the Constitution to limit the power of the federal government should it abuse the original document. That abuse is more than apparent to any reasonable American. A convention of states under Article 5 is our only realistic hope of saving our liberty. I fear Washington, D.C. far more than I fear the founders, the states, and Article 5. Respectfully, Michael Ferris. Thank you for listening to America's Fabric. Pay attention, folks. There's a lot of substance in the idea of an Article 5 convention. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.